back. I trust everybody is now well fed, and I have to admire your resilience and fortitude for staying with this so much. This is all DNSSEC all the day. This is the last session. The focus is on assigning the route. We have the people who have been right at the focus, right at the center of making it all happen. Ashley Heineman from U.S. Department of Commerce, Matt Larson, VeriSign, Rick Lamb, ICANN. I want to take just a moment to recognize my colleagues who have helped put this entire session together. Marcus Trevelyan, would you stand up and let people take a good look at that? doing a very able job with the chat room. Russ Mundy, who's ran all these sessions. Julie Hedlund, who makes us all look good. I mean, it's just every single detail. And this has been a real pleasure. We started planning these sessions. We started planning the Nairobi session, and as we got into it, we realized that for a combination of reasons, including the relatively short distance between the March session in Nairobi and this session here, that we needed to do joint planning. And so we had a multi-stage planning process in way, and phone calls every week and lots of email and so forth. So I've been sitting in the audience most of the time here and just thrilled because it's just been unfolding like a nice piece of like a well-orchestrated film. Anyway, thank you all for coming, and we'll roll right into the sort of the crowning achievement for this period of time, the signing of the route. Ashley.
Thank you, Steve, and ICANN for yet another opportunity to share with everyone what it is that's going on at the root with respect to DNSSEC implementation. I'm going to keep my remarks very short because I'm not the one involved in all the hard stuff, so I'm going to leave that to Matt to give it a more detailed presentation. But just wanted to touch on a few things that might be of interest that hasn't been widely publicized but could be something that you would want to be aware of. So very quickly, I just wanted to mention that NTIA issued a public notice on June 7th that was subsequently published in our Federal Register a couple days later. The intent of this was, for the most part, a formality to kind of wrap up the end of this exercise that we've been involved in to inform the community that ICANN and VeriSign have drafted and submitted a detailed DNSSEC at the root testing and evaluation report. Also in this report, they included their formal request for authorization to proceed with the final stages of DNSSEC implementation, primarily being a publication of the root trust anchor and the distribution of a now validatable root zone. The notice also indicated NTIA's intent to authorize, as well as the anticipated now go-live date of July 15th. And also offered an opportunity for a public review and comment period. It officially ended a couple days ago on the 21st, but just for you all to be aware, if you would like to submit comments, feel free to do so. We'll continue to consider them up through the end of this week. So before turning things over to Matt and Rick, I wanted to make a few, which perhaps might be my final remarks ever about DNSSEC implementation. First, I wanted to thank the design team. They've been fabulous. They've done an amazing job over, you know, it wasn't as short as December 1st, 2009, which was the original date that we foolishly tried to do. We took a bit longer to do it properly and efficiently, and it's been a great team. And, in fact, we have Matt and Rick here, but we also have Frederick, who's hiding over there, who's also been key to this. Second, if it wasn't for all the hard work of other people, many of you in this room who've been involved since the early days in developing and evolving the RFCs, the early adopters, and all those folks who have been involved in the development of hardware and software and all those supporting services that have been critical to this, it wouldn't have been possible without those folks. And lastly, I want to express my happiness at having been involved in this process. It's been a very small part, but I recognize how important this is, and I'm glad that I was able to participate. Lastly, I think this crowd is fully aware of this point, but want to make it anyway, or my boss would kill me, which is to be prudent and remind ourselves that this is just one step of many. It's a big one, but in terms of broader DNSSEC deployment and DNS security overall, this is just a small piece of the overall and ever-changing DNS security puzzle. So with that, I'll hand it over to the experts for the meat of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley. I'm Matt Larson from VeriSign. Our presentation is in two parts. I have the first part is some metrics and graphs about the deployment itself, and then Rick's going to discuss the key ceremony that happened last week that you've heard about earlier this morning. So with that, I will attempt to advance the slide. Oh, no, we don't want to play it. Or it'll... Okay.
This always works on a PC.
Yeah.
There you go.
There we go. Okay. So this is one of our standard slides. Just to give credit where credit's due, that ICANN and VeriSign collaborated on the design with support from the U.S. DOC NTIA. Everyone's probably aware of how the deployment of the sign route has progressed, but very briefly, let me recap. The design team came up with this idea that, as far as we know, hadn't been done before in DNSSEC deployment, which was to do an incremental deployment. And we called the thing that we were deploying incrementally the DURS, deliberately unvalidatable root zone. So we signed the root, and then we intentionally zeroed out, if you will, the key material so that it couldn't be used for validation, but we would get all the side effects of the signed root, namely larger packet sizes, larger response sizes, as well as the DNSSEC metadata in the responses, so signatures and keys and things like that. And then the DURS was rolled out incrementally to the root servers so that we could do this very slowly and see what happened with each step. And we deployed incrementally to first one server, then another server, and then two, and then three, and then five, and then finally one. So progressively larger groups of servers each time. We started that process in January, and it finished in early May. And each time we did one of those rollouts, one of those conversions when a given number of servers converted from serving the unsigned version of the root to the DURS, we did a data collection. We had 48 hours of data collected, full packet captures of every response sent, or excuse me, every query received. And that was done in collaboration with DNSORC, who acted as a vehicle to collect that data and provide a platform for analysis. So as a result, we now have a tremendous amount of data that we can use going forward that I think will be valuable to everyone from a research standpoint. It's more DNS traffic to the root and a more complete set than we've ever had. So let me give a brief pitch for DNSORC and encourage everyone to investigate DNSORC and join if you're not a member, because that's how you could get access to the data. But collecting all the data, the intent was to analyze it. And the idea was to look for indications of problems. Because we were going slow, the purpose of doing that was to make sure that nothing was going wrong between each step. So these are examples of some of the things we were looking for. At a macro level, did query rates change? As we progressively rolled to more and more servers with the DURS, if we saw queries shifting from root server instances now serving the signed root to those still serving the unsigned root, that could be indicative of resolvers that were unable to get responses from a signed root and were trying to find an unsigned root. So at a macro level, looking at query rate distribution among the different root servers, also what happened to TCP traffic, what happened to message sizes, and then the final thing was priming queries, which is a particular kind of query that is only received by the root zone. And that's a query that a recursive name server sends to a root server asking for the list of root servers so that it can use the most up-to-date list in resolution. And we were instrumented, all the root servers, well, almost all the root servers were instrumented to return, to capture and send in every single priming query for a very long time period. And that's another great set of data that, that we now have. And I have a slide that, that shows that. So with that, let me get to the graphs. And I'd like to acknowledge my VeriSign colleague and fellow member of the design team, Dwayne Wessels, who did just a tremendous job coordinating the data collection and then doing the analysis. And Dwayne did all the hard work to prepare the graphs that I'm going to show, and I get to look good, hopefully. So this is an example of 48 hours worth of root server query data graphed. What's being graphed, as you can see on the y-axis, is queries per second over approximately 24 hours. And this was the second-to-last deployment window. So this is when we started serving the signed root on the five servers you see, H-root, C-root, G, B, and F-root. So after this point in time, you can and you can see the highlighted intervals are the maintenance windows when those given server letters went from serving an unsigned root to serving the DIR is the signed root. What's being graphed in blue is the traffic, the queries per second to JRoot. So after about 2100 on April 14th there, where you see the FRoot maintenance window, at that point, only JRoot was serving the unsigned root. So this was an important graph to see, did anything go nuts on JRoot? Did we see a huge shift of traffic? And you can see that aside from that one spike, there was no traffic shift. And the spike we actually can explain, VeriSign was doing maintenance on one of our sites, and VeriSign is the operator of JRoot, and it's widely anycast, so there are instances all over. And at that particular site, we did our usual stress testing right before we took the site back online, and the stress testing queries were collected by as part of the packet capture that was going on that we then uploaded to OARC. So so that spike is known data from from VeriSign ourselves. So if you remove the spike, you can see that we have a completely unremarkable time period after the deployment. So this made the team feel really good that we didn't see unexplained activity on J. This is that same time period showing all of the root servers. And this is actually really quite a milestone. This graph represents the first time, I believe, ever that we had packet capture data from all 13 of the root server IP addresses. And the good news here is that, again, you see across this 48-hour period, really no anomalies. The drops you see on the red and green can be attributed to just data loss as opposed to an actual problem with the queries themselves. And you can see the spike in dark blue on early April 15th. That's the same one from the previous slide. So again, another validation that things were going well. This is a graph that shows all of the packet captures that we did. You can see starting from left to right, we did a data collection before we even began rolling out the DIRs. So that was an attempt at a baseline. And then you can see the six different DIRs rollout windows that we had. So the one that I've been showing you is the third from the right, where B, C, F, G, and H went. And then we did a data collection after we had rolled out J to the DIRs. So we basically have bracketing packet collections where we were all unsigned and then all signed, as well as collections for each of the DIRS events. And I would caution against reading too much into this. You can see that there appears to be a trend of increasing packet, increasing query load, and that things get sort of more tightly packed together. But then you see what happens with the J rollout. I think what this really shows us is that we don't have a really good understanding of root server traffic in general. So we were sort of starting from an unfortunate position where we didn't have a really good baseline. You know, the good news is that now that we have all this data archived, as well as the root servers instrumented and now willing to send data, all the root servers, I should say, willing to send data, we're in a much better position going forward to collect data and analyze it. But overall, our interpretation of this graph is that while there are patterns, it's difficult to interpret without a baseline. And in general, at a macro level, at a very very high level, we don't see anything disturbing that made us go, all right, we need to slow things down or stop. Here's a similar graph that's an even better way to visualize that. These are the same 8 collection intervals. But rather than stacking the data all together, each server is plotted by itself. So this is essentially the exact same data plotted on the previous slide, just rendered differently. And because you can now see each individual server's queries separately from all the others across those 8 collection intervals, this is another good way to see that if you look at any given server, there's not a lot of change. You can see in about the middle, in the light green, the sort of lime green color, there was, you can see fruit picked up some more volume for a few of the collections, but then it's back to a pattern similar to, or I should say a volume similar to before. But this was yet another affirmation that it looks like business as usual. As you look at each of these, you don't see dramatic shifts on any given server. Things are a little different with TCP, but that's to be expected. You can see how the number of TCP queries rose after a given server started serving the DIRS. And this is exactly to be expected, that the larger responses would, in some cases, cause resolvers to retry with TCP. But you can see in the second to last collection interval where there's the note there, a single ISP had an issue with a particular batch of resolvers, and you can see what a dramatic change that made to the entire root server system. And this is something we see at the root. It's something that VeriSign sees with .com and .net, that it's really remarkable how sometimes a very small number of systems can make a really significant difference in traffic to the system as a whole. But again, nothing unexpected here. This is the same data with the query rate rendered as a percent of UDP queries. And you can see now that even at its highest, we don't even hit 1%. The TCP queries still, even though they've increased, they go from a de minimis amount to a slightly more de minimis. Maybe you can't say that. But they go from almost nothing to a little bit more that's still not worth worrying about. This shows the increase in message size, which we absolutely expected. This is just an interesting way to graph it. This is the average query size for responses from JRoot, which you can see was around 350 bytes, and now that was with an unsigned zone, and with a signed zone, it goes up to about 550. So there definitely is more data being sent, but we knew that. This is just one slide to illustrate the fact that, yes, packet sizes are larger, and we knew it, and here's a graph. And my final slide, then, is an example of that priming data that I mentioned. So as you can see, this is even not the entire data set plotted. This is only the month of April. But you can see we have data continuously for the month of April. Every time a root server received a priming query, it logged it and uploaded it to OARC for analysis. And this is another good sign that if you ignore the red spikes there for a moment that went to AROOT, you can see, again, there's just no change. Throughout this time period, there was at least one DIRS deployment window, and the priming query rate just doesn't change. And since, as I mentioned earlier, priming queries are one of the things that are unique to the root, if something we did with signing the root interfered with priming queries, that would be a cause for great concern. But based on a high-level look at the rates you know, we don't seem to have an issue. And the red is another example of where one particular server, in this case literally one server, can make a huge difference. We looked at this data and thought, you know, thought we had great cause for concern, but when we drilled down, we saw that it was a single source IP address causing those spikes. And then when we called them up and said, you know, what are you doing? They realized, they explained to us that they had a particular recursive name server implementation that was possible to completely disable caching on. And this is what happens when you completely disable caching. So, you know, we're caching is keeping us from melting. So we did other data analysis beyond what I've shown you here. This is just the highlights, but I mean, if there's one theme that I hope has been obvious throughout my portion of the presentation, it's that you know, the design team did a lot of analysis to make sure that we were not going to hurt anything with this slow, deliberate rollout, and we feel very confident that's the case. And I'll turn it over to Rick.
I'm their BNSSEC program manager. I'm going to talk about the root key. I mean, first of all, I know a lot of you have followed this very closely, but just set it in context. VeriSign has the ZSK. We have the KSK. So our role is to generate the KSK and to sign four times a year with it. So generating the root key, done. Big deal. all right. So many people were behind this. Next slide, please. So many people were behind this. I mean, you know, I'm just the hands, you know, for a lot of you. And in fact, but I have to first thank my colleague and his company as well, because a lot of this stuff is foreign. The whole key ceremony thing, even that term, comes from the certificate authority world. This sort of IT security, this sort of security is somewhat unfamiliar, I think, to this particular discipline that we were in. So it was, VeriSign was wonderful in opening up their resources and explaining to us, you know, how these sort of things are done. And you know, the importance of doing this thing is not only to gain the trust of this community, because, you know, we're kind of a close-knit group, but also be able to gain the trust of other communities, such as the financial sector, you know, the industrial sector. So this was very important. So this really was a team effort. So I want to emphasize that. All right, so June 16th, this was in Culpeper, Virginia. It was just slightly outside the nuclear blast zone. People tell me it's a place where there was a shadow government. That line I have to attribute to Matt. He offered that piece of wisdom there, but it used to be considered part of a shadow government there, so, you know, dignitaries could go over there and hide. When it started, that we did everything in UTC, so it really started at like 1 o'clock, 1:30 in the afternoon, and lasted till 8:30. This was literally 30 people, including dignitaries like Dan, but also like Vince Cerf and others, were sitting there for 7 hours. And the most difficult thing I noticed was not having their laptops. This was driving them crazy. It was somewhat in a Faraday cage. Yes.
Let me interrupt. I remember something I wanted to try to. How many people here were part of the key ceremony? I know there's a handful. Stand up. This was a serious big time event. Yeah. Olaf, Frederico, Norm, Dan. How many of them? Frederick. Am I missing somebody behind? No. Oh, Suzanne? Is that? No, that was Elise back there. Yeah. Can't see how the lights are in my way. Thank you. Thank you all. I mean, these people put a hard day in, and all of these people were pretty busy in their regular lives, and it was a big event.
They were, and I was quite an ogre about it. I wanted no bio breaks, but I didn't quite win that one because I just wanted to get done soon. Anyway, it involved the 16 trusted community representatives acting as crypto officers, and recovery key shareholders. I'm going to explain what some of those roles are very quickly, but this was critical to this whole process. Any idiot can generate a root key, okay? The only way you're going to trust is if they are well-scripted, well-defined processes around this. These are some of the processes that people like Friedrich Lundgren helped us write, and others. and to have community involvement, direct community involvement. We had 11 ICANN staff running, running cameras, acting as in various roles in this process in order to be able to access the material needed to do this, including the actual crypto box and stuff. It's multi-person. You know, there's a guy that has a combination one safe, guy has a combination another safe. At minimum, two people entry to certain areas. There are five tiers of security. It goes on and on. We had one external auditor. This whole process is audited by a third party, a PwC in our case, to get something called a SysTrust audit. This is, again, an effort that ICANN took upon itself to say, well, if we're going to have this thing and go to these such great lengths, why don't we get something for this? And SysTrust is an industry internationally recognized certification, and knock on wood, hopefully we pass that. All right. Of course, there was one VeriSign representative there with the material. You know, all hail Matt. so he was there, and of course one external cameraman, and that's the DS tag. You know, 19036. What I have to emphasize here, there we say key ceremony, KSK ceremony one. There are two KSK ceremonies. This is the first part. The second part, part of the second ceremony, will reinstantiate this key into our West Coast facility. So we really can't consider the key production until it is, in fact, has a faithful backup somewhere else. So, and that ceremony is going to happen a little later. Next slide, please. All right, so again, I have to thank these TCRs. They came from all over the world, Burkina Faso, from Benin, from Czech Republic. I'll have a list in a minute, but they really, and they sacrificed their own time and money to do this. So this is quite impressive. So we, normally it's 14 crypto offices. We have 7 for the East Coast in Culpeper, 7 for LA, right next to LAX, by the way. You know, you could almost walk it, except the police stopped you from doing it. And then 7 recovery key shareholders. These are the guys that hold backups to the key used internally. None of these people were affiliated with ICANN or VeriSign or U.S. Department of Commerce. Next slide, please. Okay, crypto officers, they actually end up with physical keys to safe deposit boxes that are in those facilities. Inside those safe deposit boxes are the actual smart cards needed to use the HSM. So we can't generate a key, we can't use to sign something without at least 3 of 7 of those crypto officers present. So this is again direct community involvement. They have to travel up to 4 times a year to the U.S. and they get 2 keys. Just don't lose them was the only requirement. They're responsible. Yeah, it would be kind of messy, but we got 3 of 7, so there might be a way around this. Next slide, please. The recovery key shareholders, this was something that the design team came together and decided, what is the worst case scenario? Let's say the West Coast drops in the water and the East Coast isn't quite far enough out of that blast zone. Something happens to it, right? So we need to recover, deep recovery. So we have these recovery key shareholders. They do not hold pieces of the KSK. They hold pieces of a key used to encrypt the KSK. They take these cards with them, again, in these little tamper-evident bags, go off, disappear. We hopefully will never see them. We'll never have to see them. They do have to give us an annual inventory, take a picture of the bag and the card, you know, next to a newspaper or something like that, but that's all. But this is very important, because should everything fail, and as I think one of the team members, Matt Blacka, pointed out, was, hey, you know, there's software problems all the time. So if you had 4 devices, and unfortunately right now, the FIPS 142 level 4 devices, the highest security devices, there's only one company that really makes one that works for us. So we have 4 of the same devices. Believe me, as soon as there's another vendor, we'll use that as well. But so if they all have the same software bug, they could all fail. Then where are you? So this is a way to recover from that, and it was a very important element. So they have to travel to the U.S. for relatively short notice, but, you know, again, hopefully never, so that's good. We need 5 of 7 of that. We made that a little harder because that's kind of important key. Next slide, please. Lightning fast. All right, again, as Steve pointed out, I really want to recognize these people because without them, we would just be playing with ourselves. All right, this makes it real. All right, so on the East Coast, We had Alain Ayana from Benin. We had Anne-Marie from Sweden, Frederico Neves from Brazil, Gaurab from Nepal, Olaf Kochman, of course, everyone knows, from the Netherlands, Rob Seastrom from the U.S., and Vint Cerf. We also had at that meeting, the second group of that is for the West Coast, but we also had at that meeting these RKSHs. We had Bebel Wooding from Trinidad and Tobago, of course, the famous Dan Kaminsky. We had Jing Kangyao from China as well. That was he had a long way to go as well. Musa Kuberi, I have a hard time pronouncing him. We were struggling with him to the last minute, you know, a lot of visa difficulties and things, but we did get him for Burkina Faso. Norm Ritchie from Canada, Andre Suri, who everyone knows from the Czech Republic that does a lot of DNSSEC stuff, and of course Paul Kane from the UK. These guys stayed wide awake for 7 hours. You know, they didn't miss a trick. We would go along thinking, okay, we had at the end of the ceremony, at the middle of the ceremony, we had about 40 cards, smart cards out there, and so we were trying to rotate, testing them as we were doing various pieces. These guys would be saying, "Wait a second, you haven't tried that card yet." So they were really paying attention. That was great, and so we would then, you know, do that. Of course, we had some backup people there as well. Dave Lawrence just gave freely of his time, decided to just show up and hang out with us just in case. We had many people just ready. Christopher Griffith from Comcast, I think, he was there as well. So anyway, to all these people, it's not done yet, but we're almost there, and I'm just really happy about this. The next slide, please. All right, quick recap. I'm sure you guys all know this, but just in case there's some part of the audience that doesn't, 2048-bit RSA key, 1024-bit key. That 1024-bit key gets changed 4 times a year. I'm told that's good enough. That's safe cryptographically. Signatures with RSA SHA-256. We have the split ZSK, KSK operations. That website is where all the documentation is, including the Bible, the DPS, that Friedrich helped us write, along with very much, again, with a lot of help from VeriSign's whole SSL certificate authority side. Very, very helpful from those guys. Next slide, please. All right. I think everyone knows about this. I'm going to skip this. We are accepting DS records now.
We're in the root as of today, or as of yesterday.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I have a microphone. And the DS records are in the root. The INA function is not only accepting them now, but they're in the root now. There are, I think there are two now, with a third one on the way. .brs is in there, and .uk. I should know, but yeah. So they're there now.
Cool. Stale slide. Skip it. All right. The next key ceremony is going to be on the 12th of July in LA. This will complete the final process. This is when we will take some of the key material we generate on these, replicate it into the hardware security models or the crypto boxes west. We'll also sign the ZSK for Q4. Okay, so that should be good. You could see that site for all kinds of information. Next slide, please. All right. So finally, on the 15th of July, as you know, that's when we'll have the deliberately validatable root zone. I know, it's very hard to say, but you know, and I think some places use the V as a U, so I don't know, I'm going to get even confused, but fully validatable, that's the way currently planned to be published. I understand there'll be some further data collection then, which will be excellent to see how things work. I mean, this will be really interesting times. And then the ICANN will publish the root zone trust anchor somewhere on their websites. So next page, please. Here's a quick picture. It's kind of fuzzy and not very good of all the key ceremony participants and attendees. I was hoping maybe I could play a video at this point. It's not the one. Yeah, it's not the one on the whole, you know, not the long one on the front page. Some of you may have seen it or not. This one's been cut down a little bit and a little shorter. So it was presented in the CCNSO earlier this week. So there you go.
I would compare this to the arrival of the World Wide Web in the early 1990s in terms of its enabling capability. Of course, we'll see whether that prediction holds up. But it's a very powerful step.
It's a carefully scripted ceremony for maximum transparency. Each step is carefully lined out. We have a room full of, about 30, 35 people that will be watching every part of this step. Some will be participating in this process as well. The people will be brought into the room. Filming begins. The whole ceremony is filmed. It's not anything where people hum or have some sort of strange ritual or anything like that. I think sometimes it gets misunderstood. It's just a very formal process. Then there'll be a process of actually pulling out equipment from various safes.
These are the Class 5, GSA Class 5 safes that are used by the federal government. And they do have seismic sensors, and they also have door sensors, which would basically lock us out when the alarm systems are turned on. You can't leave the room if this door is not closed and locked.
There's alarm systems in every part of this facility, so that any unauthorized personnel immediately set off alarms and stuff. Equipment's pulled out. We go through the steps and we generate this key inside this cryptographic box. And then once that key is generated, we'll have printouts with what is called a hash of the key, a shorthand version, not the full key, which is a 204 8-bit key, but a short version of that that we'll hand out to the participants, and they'll be able to say, we were there. We saw it generated. Not only that, we saw that, there were no cards up anyone's sleeves. We saw the process. We saw it on the monitors. We tested this being generated properly.
Generating the 204-8-bit RSA key pair. Okay.
All right. I have to admit, that this was all kind of pieced together with previous pieces of film as well. We did hum. So, anyway, could I see the next slide, please? There's one more slide, yeah. All right. So, but that's, that's the whole team that was there. It was split into two places. Again, I have to emphasize more than anything else, we were just the hands behind so many people that have worked on this so hard. I mean, it's really amazing. And, Ashley said she didn't do a lot. She really did help us navigate a lot of the bureaucratic waters that we had to do to get this far as well. And, this is the design team. I have to thank all of them. But, again, there's so many other people outside of this. There's so many members from ISC, from NLNet Labs, and so many other organizations that contribute to this. It's just amazing that it finally came together. So I don't know if Matt has anything else he would like to say on that. But
I'd hesitate to even name how many people at VeriSign worked on our portion of this. So I'd be afraid to even start. People in our on the engineering side, operations side, as Rick mentioned, on the SSL certificate authority side. So just many, many people within VeriSign that I'd like to thank and acknowledge.
That's it, folks. I think we've covered it all. Is there any more? There's somebody in the chat. Oh, questions. Good.
We have
time. Well, we don't. We'll take one.
So, there's one question from the chat room. How will the root key be uncovered? As a rollover from the covered key, or just changed it simultaneously on every root server?
Well, so I'm conscious of another group wanting to get in. I'll answer very quickly. So right now in the signed root, as of July 1st, the production KSK will be in the signed root, but zeroed out. We're using production ZSKs in the root zone, but they're zeroed out. So we have all real key material, or we will as of July 1st. And then there will be, at a moment in time, we'll generate a signed root, but we will not zero out the key material. That'll be put on the distribution masters, and the root servers will get it in whatever order they do, and typically they propagate the root zone in about a half an hour. So it'll be essentially one very short interval where we'll go from the DIRS to the DVRZ.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. See you in Cartagena, Colombia. Like a key sign, everybody.
I don't know about that one. I wasn't there.